scores!
Center point Sergachev. Left circle Tyler Johnson. Center point Sergachev. Shoot, score!
Sergachev, it's time to look up ice. Steers away from Eric Staal. Continues on against Brodin. He scores! He bangs it in off Stalock. Mikhail Sergachev going by the net.
TSN 1200.
All right, 8:17. Zimmer went with a lesson in potash late last hour, so we're a little bit late coming back here. All right.
Yeah, you broke that time change news. That's what really put us into crisis.
Well, it's a maybe. We'll see if that actually happens. Okay, yeah. let's go and a presentation of the Myers Automotive Group and welcome in from NBC Sports, Pierre Maguire. Good morning, Pierre. How are you?
I thought I got relieved of my duties. Good morning, Steve. Hello, Sean.
Morning, Pierre, and my apologies. My fault.
We're good. By the way, that's one of those deals. You're talking about Sergachev signing yesterday with Tampa. That's one of those deals where if you're Mark Bergevin, you're sitting there and going, okay, did we misevaluate this player internally? Did we overestimate what Jonathan Drouin could do for our team? How did this go so far off the rails in a one-for-one? And I'll never forget that it happened. I called up the chief scout at the Tampa Bay Lightning that day, and I said, how did you pull this off? He goes, they were anxious to do it, and we were anxious to do it.
And wow. Do you also, to that, Pierre, because I look at the Drouin situation, do you give credit to Tampa Bay? Because there was also, I know, behind the scenes, they said, listen, we're fearful he'll go somewhere and take off. We're not going to make a deal till deal's right, similar to what Joe Sakic did with Duchesne.
Oh, I think that's more than fair. And again, it comes down to your evaluation of players. They knew internally they needed to add Sergachev to their team. They had more than enough offensive firepower in their organization, and they knew they had guys coming along. So to be fair to Jonathan Drouin in Montreal really valued a Francophone star who could score. They valued that, and you can understand it. So the value that they placed on that was a dominant, big, physical defenseman who can run a power play. That's how much it cost them to get Jonathan Drouin. This is whenever we have hockey back again, this is a massive year for Jonathan Drouin. He's got to deliver. But for Sergachev and for Tampa, this is a really strong contract because of the signing bonus. I know the numbers look low at the beginning, the first 2 years, but the signing bonus alleviates some of that in the first 2 years. And then the third year at 7.4, that's about where a player like that would fit in anyways in this marketplace. So they value him as a core seven player for them, and he should be. He's really that good.
If he's not with Tampa, because I mentioned this earlier, if you're going to play in the same team as Victor Hedman, you're not the one. You're not a number one defenseman. And, you know, Ryan McDonagh is a more important defenseman at this point in time to the Lightning than Sergachev. So it's 4.8 in the cap hit. What is his true ceiling here, Pierre? Is this a guy that you could see, for all intents and purposes, be that one-ish type defenseman when he's fully developed in the NHL?
You know, Steve, it's really interesting. He's breaking in with a team where he's so insulated. He can learn from Hedman every day, and he can learn from McDonagh every day. There are very few players in the league, and I mean this sincerely, and I know every player in the league. There are very few guys that have the professionalism and the work habits of Ryan McDonagh. So when you're around him, you have to keep up, because if you don't, you will fall behind. And that's one of the things that's really helped over time, just his professionalism. So if you're Sergachev watching that, and you're saying, holy mackerel, this guy's good. And then you see Hedman. Then you see Hedman, and you're like, wow, that guy is 6'6". He's 235 pounds, and he is an amazing athlete that can play. And you know what? I'm not far off from there. I can get there, but I got to work like him, and that's what he's doing.
And to that, Pierre, on the Montreal side, you go through the list of trades under Mark Bergevin. That one they lost on both sides, but the majority of the trades that they've made, I think they might be the best pro scouting staff in the league.
They're right there for sure, and I'm going to agree with you. That's why I said they put a premium on a Francophone scoring player at that juncture of development in their team building. Now, again, to be fair, I was there the day after the trade deadline when Brett Connolly got traded to the Boston Bruins by the Tampa Bay Lightning, and I just had to be right by the runway where Steve Yzerman and Jonathan Drouin were talking. Now, remember, it wasn't always peaches and cream between Jonathan Drouin and the Tampa Bay Lightning. You know, Alan Walsh was not happy with the way that his player was being treated, the agent. And so I'll never forget saying this, and I really respected him for doing it. He said, we believe in you. We trust you're going to be a really good player for us. This is your opportunity. We're giving it to you. Because Conley was moved out to create space for Drouin. And I'm not sure real rush to want to trade Conley, to be honest with you. They wanted to give Drouin an opportunity. And in one playoff series against Pittsburgh, it materialized. But outside of that, it didn't. And so they recognized as a team in Tampa, they need a defense. They wanted to build their defense. They had more than enough offense. And that's why they did the deal from their point of view. The Montreal side of it, it still hasn't manifested itself to the level I think they wanted to.
Pierre, we're going to reconnect with you really quick. We got a little bit of a gremlin in the line, so we'll get to Hammer to call you right back here, and hopefully we'll get that just to be a little bit better here. But, you know, we could hear and understand, but everybody listening can hear just a little gravelly there in our connection. And, you know, he's right, and Jonathan Drouin, we know why that deal was made, right?
Yeah.
This is a potential French-Canadian superstar, that's what you're thinking at the time of the deal, and you bring him in. And the skill is undeniable. You watch the skill level of Drouin. It is all there, but, man, it is it's hard to look at it right now and say that's a fair trade-off right now.
And also do a little homework. And I said this at the time, same as I said as Cody Ceci. Can he handle the pressure going to Montreal? This is a guy that when he was sent by the farm team, and Alan Walsh did a terrible job handling him, he went home. I mean, there's a character flaw here, and the maturity was never there. I thought last year, Lloydie, at least in last year's regular season, he finally turned the corner. But if he's not doing anything for you offensively, he ain't doing anything. I mean, he is about as one-dimensional, and if that one dimension isn't there, then you know what? He's a useless player.
Okay, well, we've got him back, and it's Pierre McGuire from NBC Sports. So let's move on. We've kind of covered that here. Big news from the World Junior Selection Camp. This is going to be tough now. It's kind of like the draft, isn't it, Pierre? You're going to have to pick this team based on prior knowledge, as the quarantine period now is going to shut this selection camp down for 2 weeks. What are your thoughts?
I don't think that'll be that difficult for Team Canada. They're overly stocked with a lot of great players. They know that. They're deep enough. If they sent two Canadian teams, they might have a chance to play Canada 1, Canada 2 in the gold medal game. I mean, that's how deep Canada is, and that's no disrespect meant to the other teams. Just because we won't have NHL, then they'll have NHL players that will be available to you. That makes it really, really difficult for the other teams around the world. All that being said, the only thing I'm concerned with, and I've thought about it a lot since I got those text messages, probably like you guys got yesterday from the camp, and obviously the two-week delay, I just worry about mission creep. Soldiers go through this all the time when they're in a position where they're in the same situation day after day after day, and the monotony kicks in day after day after day, and finally you lose your focus, and the mission creep really creates a problem. I hope that doesn't happen with this team just because of the two-week layoff. I hope that's the only concern I have about this. Outside of that, I don't think it'll affect them in their ability to play on the ice.
Hopefully with a phone, video games, and a strong mini bar, you can end up making it through up here. When you come out of this in the 2 weeks, would you ever think of doing fitness evaluations? Because I do think, and they're young men, but when I look at how some might be affected by the virus, but would you ever worry about that? Or do you think, 2 weeks from now, still got 2 weeks until your opening game, everybody should be able to get into tip-top shape?
No, I would be worried about that. That'd be one of the things I'd be wanting to talk to my strength and conditioning people about. I'd want to talk to our doctors about what are the best ways that I can maintain fitness levels with this group. Because obviously most of them are in unbelievable shape going in. As you have to believe, there's no way they would have made it to this point if they weren't. My biggest concern, and we talked about it maybe yesterday or the day before, I forget now, their depth at center is overwhelming. How many of those centermen are going to have to move to the wing? Because I think basically the skill level of those centermen that Canada has is so overwhelming. It may be a player like Newhook, maybe a player like Byfield has to move over. Maybe Kirby Dodd moves to the wing. Maybe Dylan Cousins moves to the wing. That's going to be the interesting thing, is how they're going to do it down the middle and how that affects how they pick their team. That's the only thing I would worry about in terms of selection process with the group.
Johnny Boychuk, unfortunately, has to retire due to an eye injury, and he's had eye problems in the past and had a more recent one this past March. Played a little bit in the bubble, but he's talked to specialists, and saw the video of him yesterday. It was really, he teared up. It was heartfelt. Doesn't want to stop playing, unfortunately, but he has to medically. What are your thoughts on the career of Johnny Boychuk?
First time I ever saw him play is playing for the Calgary Hitmen in the Western Hockey League. Next time I saw him play is playing for the Moose Jaw Warriors. And then the next time I saw him play, he was playing for a potpourri of teams in the American Hockey League. And he really never found his traction as a pro until he got into the Bruins organization and really did well. And maybe Sean saw him a lot with the Providence Bruins before he really got his opportunity in Boston. But what I remember the most, and it was something that I'll always cherish, is visiting was in Ottawa the day after Johnny Boychuk got traded to the New York Islanders, and Chara was livid. He was really upset. He said, "This is a major loss for our organization. I don't think people realize how important Johnny was to the way we played, physical, tough, offensive." And I used to call him the Bombers from the blue line. Back then, Chara could really shoot the puck. Seidenberg could really shoot the puck. And Boychuk could really shoot the puck. The long-range Bombers from Boston, and they would just torpedo your team because the Bruins would crash down in the net and get the puck back to the point and just launch it and create all these second and third chance opportunities. So I was really hurt yesterday when I saw this. I respect him so much. Not just as a player. He was a really robust, stealth player. But as a person, you talk to Mark Recchi, you talk to Zdeno Chara, talk to Patrice Bergeron, talk to any of the guys that play with him on the Islanders, Josh Bailey, Johnny Tavares, any of those guys, they'll tell you the same thing. One of the best teammates I ever had. I spoke with Lou Lamoriello early this morning, and he said, one of the truly great professionals I've ever had the privilege of working with. That says a lot. Lou Lamoriello doesn't hand out compliments very often. I can just tell you that right now. That says all you need to know about Johnny Boychuk.
And Lou also has an incredible ability of making contracts disappear. And to that, Pierre, this is a situation that makes sense for both sides, right? In essence, the value of the player on the salary cap and for where they're at, and at the same time from a health standpoint. It's quite simply, with 2 years left at his age, at 36, it works out for both sides.
Well, it does, but I don't think Johnny was ready to retire. I can tell you that, Sean. And I understand your point about contracts disappearing. Lots of teams have that ability to do that, but I don't think that's the case in this situation. I feel terrible for Johnny. He really wanted to keep playing. I'll tell you a quick story about him. He was playing for the Bruins, and he got hit in a game. He wasn't wearing a shield at the time. And, you know, everybody at that time was really worried about eye injuries. It's when Mark Stahl in New York got hurt, and that's when all the Stahl boys put shields on. And I remember Johnny Boychuk one time saying his mom told him the same thing. If he didn't put a shield on, he wasn't going to be playing. And, you know, and he did. He put it on. And so it's amazing that, you know, he gets hurt around the eye, even though he had a shield on. It shows you how dangerous the game can be around the eyes in particular. And obviously, this is a thing that has ended his career. But I would just tell you this. Been in the league over 30 years. Very few people that I've met that have handled themselves like Johnny Boychuk over the course of 30 years.
Well, he didn't become a full-time NHL player until 5 or 6 years into his pro career. And I think maybe that's part of the appreciation from so many teammates over the years, Pierre.
Correct. Oh, I can just tell you again, I gave you a little bit of his pedigree, you know, starting with Calgary and moving to Moose Jaw and then playing for so many different teams in the American Hockey League before he ever really got a sniff. It reminds me a lot of Bryce Salvador, by the way. You know, Bryce played 5 years in the West, then joined St. Louis, but he's playing in Worcester forever and ever and ever before he ever gets a sniff to play in the NHL. Those are the guys I really respect because, Sean, you could tell people, that's a different way to live. That's not an easy way to live. That's a different way to live.
Yeah, no, I always, from an Ottawa side, look at a Matt Karkner, and then at the same time, Pierre, it's great to see these guys get paid because, as you said, I did watch him in Providence, a really touch-and-go. He was kind of he's one of those players that's kind of funny to watch, right, because he was always a lot of activity when he's on the ice, right? You know, he'd be good or bad, but at the end of the day, he got his payday and, as you said, put in the long hours and made it the hard way.
Oh, yeah, right. For sure he did.
We'll leave it there. Happy Thanksgiving to you, Pierre. I know that you're north of the border right now, but celebrate Thanksgiving, and we got a couple of football games later today. Do you have any special plans at all today?
No, we're in quarantine, but there are a lot of wild turkeys. When I was a kid growing up here, and you can talk to anybody that grew up around the Trumbull area, there were no wild turkeys when I was growing up around here. Trust me, there were deer, there were bear. You know, there were a lot of other types of animals, rabbits. There were no wild turkeys. I've never seen a population of wild turkeys like I'm seeing right now.
Are those?
No, it's amazing.
Do you know the origin of that?
I do not.
No, it's actually, they were, the original one came in, I think it was 72, was pardoned at the White House, and then they were actually brought to Tromblon.
Yeah.
Okay.
I've seen a lot of stuff over here over the course of being here since the 1960s. I've never seen this many wild turkeys ever.
And does anybody ever eat them here?
They're not good to eat.
Okay.
No. There might be the dumbest creatures on the planet. They will drown in the rain and just look to the sky. So, anyways. Okay.
It really is. Have a good one. Happy Thanksgiving to our American listeners. Talk to you guys tomorrow. Bye-bye.
It's Thanksgiving south of the border. Usually, it means a triple header, but it's a doubleheader now. Ravens Steelers has been moved to 1:15 on Sunday afternoon. We got you covered on TSN 1200 every Sunday, and we've got you covered today. In the Box will be a two-hour show today, breaking away at noon for pregame coverage, and we'll have both games starting at 12:30. It's the Texans and the Lions, followed by the Cowboys and Washington still to come later today. So let's go to the Gabriel Pizza Hotline right now and welcome in from Post Media. As I mentioned, covers the NFL. It's John Crick. Good morning, John. How are you?
Well, you know, guys, I mean, if you know it's 2020 when you have a triple header and it's Baltimore-Pittsburgh that gets postponed, not Detroit-Houston or Washington-Dallas. I mean, what's more 2020? We say it every day, and there's your latest example.
Yeah, and here we are. Unfortunately, just got the two to look forward to here. But okay, let's have the discussion of scheduling in the NFL. They've got all kinds of contingency plans in place. Even to the point where if they had to shorten the season, they could expand the playoffs here. As we go through Thanksgiving in the United States, John, should the NFL be very concerned about maybe having to execute some of these contingency plans towards the end of the year?
Well, I mean, they've got the plan in place, right? I mean, you have to understand that all the teams are playing this week for the first time since, I think, like September. And then there's next week, there's two more teams that have a bye, and that's it. So the point of that is that there's no flexibility left, basically. You recall how when the Tennessee had its little outbreak back in, I guess it was late September, where they had to, within the week, they rejigged the schedules of a whole bunch of teams right through to week 10, including telling the Pittsburgh Steelers, hey, you're not playing this week. This is your bye week now this week. Well, a lot of players make some plans for that bye week, right, that weekend off. And so they got screwed that way, and now they're pretty bitter that, once again, it's not their fault. It's another team's fault. It's their arch rival's fault, the Ravens, where they had, I'm sure, some plans for this weekend, right? This is only the weekend they had off, scheduled to have off for the whole season. So the two scheduled weekends off were both kiboshed by another team's COVID problem. But, yeah, the league is – they'll do what they have to do. I mean, they could not bubble. When you've got nearly 10,000 people on the 32 teams between players, coaches, support staff, who are being tested daily for COVID, and then at night, everybody except for the coaches that sleep on the couch at the headquarters, they're all going home at night, and they're seeing who? They're seeing their family and their kids, and occasionally they'll have somebody over. And the league contact tracing has found that every case of an infected player or team member has not come from a game setting or even a practice field setting during the week. It has come from a meeting, or it would be when they go home at night and they catch it from a family or friend and bring it back to the facility. So they're doing about as much as I believe anybody could do with, albeit frankly, limited knowledge we all have on this coronavirus. And they're going to do what they have to do to get through the season. If that means that there's enough scheduling problems where they have to reschedule an important game, Detroit-Houston today not being one of them, but if they had to reschedule an important game that might impact on the playoffs, then they'll just add an extra week to the regular season, which would be on January 9-10 weekend, and then push the playoffs ahead accordingly.
During the day, John, it's a meeting. At night, it's a rendezvous. When you look at these teams, though, if you're Mike Tomlin, do you say, listen, guys, stop the whining here? Because I really thought on Chase Claypool as a rookie, hey, the game's being rescheduled. Whine all you want, but, hey, the Baltimore Ravens are the ones that are probably going to be shorthanded still on Sunday.
Well, right. And although the fact that this has happened now, the one reason why they have a legitimate complaint is that the NFL's rule for – if any of us were to, or including in the school system, might have a daughter that had a classmate have COVID. And so they immediately ordered the teacher and all the students to go home and self-isolate for 14 days. 14 days is the CDC in the States and the Public Health Agency of Canada here is the requirement and the suggested requirement for all businesses to self-isolate as a potential high-risk close contact. Well, the NFL's midway through the season kind of instituted this five-day self-quarantine for high-risk close contact. So my point of that is that when Baltimore found out on Sunday night or Monday morning that they had that infected individual, the trainer, I guess, and then they had a couple of players, a few players that were high-risk close contacts. Well, that 5 days takes them through until Saturday. So the fact that the game was now not on Thursday means that those players now are eligible to play, potentially, if they don't come down with the coronavirus or have any symptoms. So that does actually impact the game. There will be more Ravens, presumably, available to play against the Steelers on Sunday, no matter how much low chances you think the Ravens might have. They're not playing well. Losers of three of their last four. And, of course, the Steelers are undefeated. But that will impact the game. So I'm not suggesting that, you know, they shouldn't be. Their whining is justified, but their concerns are, hey, this is actually going to now help the Ravens.
And just moments ago, John, I just noticed that the report out of Baltimore, Jameson Hensley's reporting, they had more positive tests yesterday, and that news will come out later today with Baltimore. So maybe Sunday's game is in question. Anyways, we'll see on that front. But let's get to the games that we do know. Listen, there's no other way. Lions-Texans. Okay, so that's the first game here on Thanksgiving. And how many times has this come up over the years, John? If you're just settling in and you're looking forward to watching all-day football on American Thanksgiving, the conversation always seems to come back to, is it time to take the Lions out of the schedule here? Because they're never any good. But, you know, tradition is tradition. You know, and I understand it, why it's there. Why break with tradition? But am I wrong? And how many times has that story been written, talked about year after year after year?
Well, most. I'm from that area, from Windsor, which was, you know, I always say the United States, which is geographically true, was the country to the north. When you grew up in Windsor, you have to go north across the bridge where my dad worked and where a lot of my friends and family are still. But yeah, I mean, the people down there, it is a tradition. It is since whatever it was, 1934, whatever it was. And actually, you know, because I'm on the side, I do some U.S. college football history research and written a couple books. I mean, it goes back to the 1880s, the tradition of Thanksgiving and football in the United States and in that area. Chicago, Detroit, it goes that far back, you know. It predates the NFL by decades, the whole big game on Thanksgiving. The problem is that the Lions can't bring a big game very often. Some years, yes, we pick the Lions in our, you know, in your pools because they tend to, before the NFL went to Thursday football, the Lions actually had a little bit of an advantage in that they and the Cowboys were the only team that annually still have that built-in Thursday game, right? And so before they went to Thursday night football, whenever it was, a decade or so ago, they had a bit of an advantage in that they knew how to turn around on that short week. And so sometimes they pull off the big upset. Well, they don't have that advantage now. And so we see those Detroit upsets over another team. Even it's become less and less a tasty game, if you will, to kick off everybody's Thursday afternoon. And this year is no exception. I mean, it isn't that the Houston Texans are anything great. Yes, they're coming off a couple of years of playoff runs, whatever. But the player that, if you want to watch this first game, and he's going to be by far the best player on the field, is Texans quarterback Deshaun Watson. He did not have a good start to the season. I've been fairly critical of him in the last couple of years in that he is so inconsistent. And we saw it in that Kansas City playoff game where he was gangbusters for a quarter and a half and then disappeared. And he did nothing against the Bills, 0 points at halftime in that playoff game the week before. So I've been quite critical that he has not been a consistent performer, maybe as much as people say. But this year, his stats, in spite of having lost DeAndre Hopkins and the limited talent around him and on the team in general, he's been magnificent. Nearly 70% completions. I think his touchdown interception ratio was like 20-5. For that, for a quarterback to be performing at that level. And hey, since they started 0-4, I think they're 3-3. You're going to see a good performer if you're just looking for a good football performances. We'll see highlights. I'm sure most of them will be from him.
Yeah, and that's with giving away their best receiver, John, in the offseason. Matt Patricia, no playoffs. Is that the end of the road for him and another Lions coach fired?
Oh, yeah. I talk to people down there and read the stories, and it's just the rite of passage. Yeah. Year three, just like it had been for Buffalo before Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean came around.
It's like did he try to be Bill Belichick before he ever won anything, too, in the way he handled the media?
Yeah. See, here's the big problem that he had at the start there isn't so much that he instituted, which he wanted to be, disciplined. They built the little hill at the side of their training facility where the players will do their burners or gassers at the end of practice. He's trying to, as all these other Belichick coaching acolytes have done, and not successfully, but generally, he's tried to bring the New England, and that was their whole plan, right? With Quinn, their former Patriots front office person there as the GM in Detroit, they've tried to carbon copy what Belichick did in New England, and it isn't working. And the problem there was that they had Jim Caldwell as the head coach, a couple of 9-7 seasons, but it did feel that, this is probably as good as we're going to get with this coach. Let's try to raise the bar because, of course, the Lions have won one playoff game since the 50s. Incredible, but true. And so this was a way for them to raise the bar. But all it did when he went in there and he just peed off every player in the locker room pretty much when they got there, because they're like, hey, it's not like it's totally broken. There's a lot of people that there's a saying, we all grew up with, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Well, there's a lot of people in this century that, if it's broke, don't fix it. And like, whatever. I mean, even if it's not broken, still fix it. Well, that's what he was doing. And that's what he's tried to do in Detroit. And he lost the locker room the first year. They went down. They traded a lot of those guys away. They had a talent dearth last year. And then this year, it's just been a disaster with you've got to get us to the playoffs or at least be competitive mandate from the new owner, one of the Ford daughters. He's not there. They're not going to make the playoffs, and it's just a matter of time. They won't fire him this week, but any time after Sunday, don't be surprised, especially if they get blown out today.
All right, so the 4:30 game, couple of three-win teams, and one team will emerge as a division leader. That is the NFC East this season here. So it's Washington, it's Dallas at 4:30. And, John, maybe we can kind of tie in the whole, not exactly a ringing endorsement from Doug Peterson yesterday on Carson Wentz when he was asked directly a few times about his starting quarterback for Monday night. Evaluate this NFC East for us. Please?
Yeah. Well, you get four coins, you see, and you flip them once each for the next 6 weeks, and then assign it to a team, and that's as good as, have four different dog bowls in whichever food gets eaten the quickest over the next 6 Sundays, you'll figure out that's as good a way to figure out who's going to win this division. So, I mean, there's so many reasons to point and laugh at this division. Most of the defenses are terrible, right? The quarterback play has been bad, and obviously, with the asterisk of Dak Prescott being injured. But we didn't think that we'd see Andy Dalton versus Alex Smith today, even a month and a half ago, right? I mean, it's both teams are, they come out and you don't know what you're going to get. For instance, who would have thought that with Andy Dalton's first game after having his concussion, that he'd come back last weekend and that they'd win at Minnesota with the worst defense probably in the history of Cowboys football, somehow was able to slow up the Vikings offense and Dalvin Cook enough to pull it out. It's what I would say was about Washington is that of all the units, offense and defense in that division, their defense, especially their pass rush, might be the best. And so they might have actually, if they had a better quarterback play, no big shot there at Alex Smith, but if they had a little better offense, you'd probably give them the favorites, not at this point, but who knows? I mean, Daniel Jones, if he gets rid of the interceptions and the fumbles, especially with the Giants, maybe they can go on a little run. They've played a lot better in the last month or so. And then, of course, the Eagles with Carson Wentz, who on paper should be by far the best quarterback of the bunch, but his confidence is shot. He's had no protection, And if there's one lesson to take out of this division, guys, for the year, it's if you don't have an offensive line to protect, no matter how good you think your quarterback is, he's going to struggle.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's been a disaster. And the Washington football team, since Mr. Snyder bought it, John, what a joke of a franchise that's turned into.
It is. I mean, it's just, I don't know of a Redskins fan, or sorry, a Washington football team fan that likes this owner. I mean, if you could, I always have said this, well, you know, whether it was Harold Ballard with the Leafs in the 70s and 80s, whatever, if you could take a straw poll of your fans, or actually a scientific poll, and if it reaches a certain threshold, then league should force that team to sell. I mean, wouldn't people just love that? You know, and whether that applies to any team in Ottawa, I don't know. But you could just, if that were the case, I believe owners would behave better and spend more money and try to do what's the more prudent, popular thing rather than the things that they do.
All right. We'll leave it there. I understand you got a bit of a busy morning, and then you'll be locked in to the doubleheader that we now have today on this American Thanksgiving. Always appreciate the time, John. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me on, guys. Take care.
Here's John Crick from Post Media. You can follow him on Twitter. Check out his stuff in Post Media. He's been covering the NFL for that chain for a number of years. And he joins us on the Gabriel Pizza Hotline. You can download the Gabriel Pizza app today and start earning those pizza perks. We're back with another hour of the show. And just a programming note reminder, as we're talking football, we're just a little over 3 hours away from breaking away for football for the rest of the day with that doubleheader, both games on TSN 1200. In the Box will break away at noon, kick off at 12:30 with the Lions and the Texans. We're back in a moment on TSN Mornings on TSN 1200.